The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I am live on location at Kirby Estates. And I got not one, but two guests. I was wondering if both you guys could say your names and say hi to the audience.
Maria Kirby.
And I'm Scott Kirby, and we're very happy to be hosting Mr. Cuz.
Your place is gorgeous. And the funny thing is, we'll start here. We're in Niagara-on-the-Lake near Virgil, in Niagara-on-the-Lake area. And the funny thing is, 32, or not even 12 seconds before I got here, I felt like I was in the middle of town. I'm like, there can't be a vineyard somewhere near here. And then within 8 seconds later, this beautiful, idyllic place.
Niagara's best kept secret.
Scott, you came from like world of like project management, real estate, golf courses. How did you and Maria decided to go from real work to hard work in the wine business?
Well, our first thought was that we wanted a lifestyle change from having lived 33 years in Markham, Ontario. We were trying to find a place that was beautiful, more beautiful than where we were living, which was also beautiful. And as a result, we started a search in Caledon and in Niagara, and eventually figured out that Niagara-on-the-Lake was the place we wanted to be.
And I had said, I just want another nice backyard.
And you got it. Yeah, you absolutely got that very nice backyard. Also, one thing I want to compliment you guys on, and Scott, I often find that, and this is a stereotype, that usually men, especially older men, I see this all the time, they have a style of wine that they like. They don't usually deviate too much. By the way, there's nothing wrong with that. Wine is meant to be enjoyed. If you find something you love and you want to stick with it, that's fantastic. But I come and look at, you know, your mini cellar here, and I see a lot of Ontario Pinot, and I see Turley Zinfandel right next to it. That is a man that has, you definitely, and both of you guys, have a very wide range of taste, don't you?
We do indeed. And as long as it's good or great wine, we're happy to indulge really at our leisure. It's something we enjoy in the evenings just to relax.
And where did the passion for wine come from? No one buys a vineyard unless they have some sort of background where wine, you know, brought them joy over the years. Where did that come from?
Well, I started at the table as a child. I hate to say it. My heritage is Greek. My parents always put a little bit, splash of red wine in a glass of water. Mm-hmm. I did live in Greece for 12 years from the age of 6 to 18. And it was just something. There's no drinking age there. I wasn't doing anything illegal. But anyway, yeah, so I've always enjoyed it at the table. And we've always enjoyed it together, really.
For myself, I started collecting wine in my late teens. And,
in your late teens?
Yeah, indeed. And it was...
So, hold on, but where did that come from?
It wouldn't have represented much of a collection by today's standards, so...
No, but not teenagers don't collect wine. When I was a teenager, you know, I was just drinking Coors Light and whatever was available. So what was it that that turned you on to wine? Because that is... Maybe, you know, you see that more in Europe than, you know, say, Greece, but certainly not as much in North America.
Well, I guess it was... the fact that my folks enjoyed a glass of wine, I thought it was couth to understand wine. I loved having it with food. Whilst I didn't have a big budget at the time, it was certainly something that I thought every civil person should indulge in.
So let's go to Kirby Estates. What were those early days like? Like when you decided to purchase this property? I think it was it 2016, 17?
2017. The land here really spoke to us for a variety of reasons. We had been searching for property in Niagara-on-the-Lake. We were staying at the Oban Inn on weekends and had worked with a real estate agent looking at different properties. Not to mention, we had looked at orchards, we had looked at houses, we had looked at a variety of different farms. As I mentioned, this property spoke to us. Curiously, just the way the house sits on the property in the middle of a vineyard. It's not on the edge or by the street. You're surrounded by vines, and I guess really just when we walked into the dining area that overlooks the vineyard, it's elevated. Maria and I looked at each other and said, we could work with this.
And then we did our research to make sure we weren't investing in a very expensive backyard.
Yeah.
We met Craig initially, yeah. Right?
And that's Craig Wismer?
Yes.
Correct.
Vineyard manager, Glen Elgin Vineyard Management. We put some numbers together. And we thought, well, certainly we can do this.
And what was his initial assessment? What was your guys' initial assessment of this property in terms of what style of wine and what sort of quality could be produced from this area here?
Well, I think we didn't really know. The historical record for this property was just selling grapes to other wineries. And that's how previous ownership had operated. When we spoke with not just Craig, but his father, Rick Wismer, who is an agricultural accountant or does a lot of accounting work for different agricultural enterprises, he had indicated that we should be able to make a go of this as a small business. So essentially, we were buying a house and a small business.
Right. Okay.
After 1 year and watching what our customers were doing, meaning the wineries we were selling to, winning awards, we thought, holy moly, this place deserves to have wine made at it because of the quality of the fruit that was coming from it. And no thanks to the work of Craig Wismer either.
And yeah, people listening need to know that, like, Wismer, it's also the name of one of the more famous vineyards in Niagara. If there's ever a day where we start classifying things in Premier Cru, Grand Cru style level of wines, the Wismer properties would certainly be near the top of the list. You know what? Let's talk about the two wines we tried. We're going to try your line of Merlots in a second. We tried the 18 Chardonnay.
And 19 Chardonnay.
Oh, sorry. Yes, the 19 Chardonnay. And I've got a little bit of the 20 left. The first thing I appreciate is, A, just how different they are. It's always a sign of a good vineyard when there is vintage variation versus people that try to make, you know, a one style where it's the same thing year in and year out when you're trying to make Pepsi instead of Chardonnay, which is obviously ridiculous.
Drink the vintage in Ontario because
yes.
They're all different.
What do you remember or what are your thoughts first on the 19 Chardonnay?
So the Chardonnay in 19 was a cool vintage. It was sort of an early harvest overall. Late October typically is when we harvest Chardonnay.
Late September
we usually harvest Chardonnay. Late October we're harvesting Merlot. It was our first shot at Chardonnay, and we have old vines, and they are
19 was your first Chardonnay?
Yes.
For your first Chardonnay, that's a damn good wine.
You know, we decided we're not going to cut corners. So we started working with Craig, and we listened to what he had to say. And it really well was from there that we went forward, right? And with Matt and our winemakers. Now, we have the soils, we have the vines, we have age in the vines. And then we've got, you know, all these other moving parts that you have, you know, control of moving forward. And that's basically what we're trying to do.
And the other component, of course, is the winemaking. And we were introduced, of course, to Cloudsley Cellars, which is captained by Adam Lowy and winemaker Matt Smith. And we've been very blessed to be basically introduced to that group. Just by way of history, Matt has tutelaged under such names as Thomas Backhelder and Kelly Mason. He is currently also the winemaker succeeding Kelly Mason at Hansberger. So a nice pedigree for our winemaking team. We've been just very blessed to have them as part of Kirby Estate and producing just a high quality method and product for the fruit from this vineyard, and it's exclusively from this vineyard.
Well, it's one of the things that impressed me when I was just doing my research. I see Smith and I see Wismer, and then I see Peter Gamble and Lowy. You guys did a good job. You guys put together, you know, sort of this all-star team of people to help you out, which is a credit to you guys, because, you know, if you've got just crazy ego, you're like, no, we can do it on our own. But instead, you guys have your own passion. You have wines. You're going to want it made in the style that you enjoy drinking. We discussed it before we started, but you guys also brought in a lot of really intelligent, hardworking people. That's a testament just in terms of the team you guys have put together.
Well, thank you very much for that, Matt. And it was really us understanding that the fruit quality was very high to begin with. And then being introduced to these other team members that could lend their expertise, listening to them, and then also having them make suggestions, for example, with our Merlots to differentiate our product, meaning from our estate to our reserve to our signature lines of products, as well helping us understand what quality exactly we were producing.
And highlight the terroir.
Yeah.
As you saw, the soils.
Yeah,
I know. Different.
That was cool. Maria dug up from listening a couple of the different soils and just the difference, like just the harder one versus something like so soft, like it's just gracefully going through your hands. What was the first year like for you guys? I mean, I always imagine the first year must be the most insecure because it's like, all right, we're actually doing this. What are some of your memories from your first year, your first harvest? Because I believe this is your seventh harvest.
Actually, we were giggling a lot. We watched the sunrise every day. We watched the sunset every day. And it was just a change, mm-hmm. a complete change.
In lifestyle, for certain.
Yeah.
It's a lot of hard work. We're typically... either Maria and I or one of us are walking the vineyard each day to see what's happening, keeping eyes and ears open for Craig.
And the winemakers.
I'd say that the periods of time that are most trepidation are in the spring, obviously, just worrying about frosts for newly broken buds. And then also in the fall at harvest time when you're trying to let the fruit hang sufficiently to mature and ripen as it should to reach optimum sugars and such. It's really that's when it gets scary, and we're still learning on that.
Yeah, well, it's
you can't control the weather, right?
Oh no, that's the number thing is
you do your Sundance, you can sing to the vines, but
this is a tough job for control freaks because you only have so much control. Actually, let me ask you this. How much different is your relationship with weather now versus 10, 20 years ago?
Well, we used to play a lot of golf.
Yeah.
So it was always, oh, it's going to rain. We won't get our 18 holes.
Yeah.
Now it's, oh my gosh, just don't hail. It's like
think about hail. 20 years ago, hail was a minor annoyance versus what hail means now to you and to your vintage and how much wine you can produce.
We were here one day when there was hail, and it was only lasted, what, 2-3 minutes, and we were like devastated. And then it was a learning process. We learned the grapes had not gone through Verizon yet, mm-hmm. and they recovered completely.
Oof.
So, yeah.
And now it's all about frost, isn't it, for you guys?
Well, it's frost, and when it does hail, it has got to be one of the most helpless feelings in the world.
Yeah.
Because there's virtually nothing you can do.
Oh, that's got to be so tough. All right, so let's try the first Merlot that we're having here. And by the way, for you guys,
2018.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up.
So this is our second year here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And now we decide. Oh my gosh! Well, we've got a vineyard. Everyone's coming.
Our first crack at wine. Your second year here.
Yeah, second year here, and our friends are all coming over and said, "Well, we want to try your wine." We said, "We don't have any wine. We just bought a vineyard. We're farmers." So now we've got we're harvesting the grapes in the fall of 2018.
And we have to wait because it has to sit in oak for almost 2 years.
Yeah.
Well, 18 months, 20 months, whatever was it for the 18s?
It was 20 months.
20 months.
Yeah.
And it's so tough because it's like, wait a minute, we've made this product. We've spent all this time and now you just have to sit on it. And for someone who comes from any sort of business background, it's like, wait a minute, we spent all the money and manpower. Now what do we do? Well, now you can't sell it for 18 months, 2 years. That's going to be such a weird adjustment as well.
And then, of course, Adam Lowy told us, now, you know, you're excited. Go home. Don't open that bottle. Let it sit. It's going to go through bottle shock. You need to wait at least, what'd he say, 3, 4, 5, 6 months?
6 to 12 months.
Yeah. So we came home. We waited about six minutes.
Yeah.
and we thought, this is really good. Anyway, and then we put it away, and then I think we opened it, what, maybe 1 month later?
And then 2 months later, and then we calmed down a bit. Anyway, you're drinking it today.
It is. Okay, before I get my thoughts on it, what made you decide on Merlot? I mean, I guess it is warmer here than, say, in the Bench, where like Batchelder and Kelly Mason are hanging out. But usually a lot of people think of Niagara, and they think of either Gamay, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay. And by the way, that, we didn't even mention the 2020 Chardonnay. What I loved about it was it's a hot vintage, but that wine doesn't taste hot at all. So good on everyone involved on that. But what the decision to focus on Merlot?
Well, so the vines were here.
The vines were existing vines planted in 2002. So for Niagara, that's rather old
yeah.
for Merlot, owing to the fact that there's been numerous winter occasions of extreme weather that have resulted in die-off of a lot of the older Merlot vines. Fortunately, this particular location being about 2.7 kilometers from Lake Ontario, mm-hmm. we have some moderating influences in the wintertime, which we're Niagara Lakeshore sub-appellation. And then secondly, we have an extraordinarily sandy loam soil, which promotes extraordinarily good drainage, and so no water sits around the roots of these plants come wintertime. And I believe that's been the saving grace for these older vines.
And we love Merlot.
By the way, and that's a perfect part of it. I love when people are making the wines that they love versus, well, marketing, or someone told us that people buy this amount versus this. Oh, okay, totally off topic. By the way, that 18 is killer. It is this warm hug of a variety of jams, well restrained. That is a beautiful drink in Merlot. You could still throw this away for at least another half decade easily on the 18. How much do you guys hate the movie Sideways?
We need a new movie.
We are going to personally resurrect Merlot as a crusade. That movie didn't do us any help.
But it's okay. We'll drink it if nobody else wants to.
Yeah. Well, the weird
just bring all the good Merlot here.
Well, the weird thing is at the end of the movie, what's he drinking? He's drinking Cheval Blanc. That's a Right Bank Merlot-based wine. Did they do that on purpose? Was that just a mistake by the wine writers? That one always confuses me. But it also speaks to just how insecure the wine market can be, where one movie, one line can make it so Pinot sales rocket, which is fine. Pinot's awesome. But then Merlot sales go down. Like, it does kind of speak to how there is a level of insecurity that a lot of people have when it comes to purchasing wine.
So you're telling us we have to get into the movie business?
Yes. I'm saying is you got to produce, you got to do it. But in this one, you know, in this one, the main character says, I'm not fucking drinking Pinot. I'm only going to drink Merlot. But getting back to just the...
And one of the most planted grapes, though.
Oh, God,
varieties, right?
But as you were saying, the soil certainly helps. And as you mentioned, how close you are to Lake Ontario. And that, like, this region, your sub-appellation here, like Niagara Lakeshore, certainly works better for Bordeaux blends than, say, if you're in Prince Edward County.
That's for sure. And as I mentioned before, you need that effect of the lake. And you just need a microclimate that is conducive to longevity in the case of Merlot.
And then it's all magic from mm-hmm. there on, right?
Yeah.
It all comes together, speaks for itself.
I loved how just you totally ignored Adam's advice about when to open up the 2018. Were you, by the way, were you nervous? Like, how nervous were you at that moment?
I wasn't nervous. You were nervous?
I would say we were nervous because we had already harvested the 19 vintage. We were making Chardonnay and Merlot, and that was based on the barrel tastings, you know, that we had done earlier, that we knew the wine was going to be very drinkable, and it turned out to really exceed our expectations. So we've been very blessed that way, and it's just a tribute to our winemaking team. Our viticulture team really believing in the process. Mm-hmm.
You can so tell the difference between the 18 Estate Merlot. I've only smelled the 20 Reserve, but it's just bigger. It's more serious. It's more brooding. There's more dark fruit coming out. So just talk a little bit about your wines. You guys have Estate. Is it Estate, Reserve, and Signature? Are those the three levels of, what are the levels of wine? What do people need to know?
There's three tiers, mm-hmm. Estate, Reserve, and Signature, and we don't produce all every year. We let the wine speak to us and tell us
Well, and it's really a function of Mother Nature as well. Every vintage, it's funny, coming to Niagara as a rookie, we were asking some of the more experienced growers and winemakers, what is a normal year in Niagara? And you just hear laughs coming back at you. There's no such thing as a normal year in Niagara. Everyone's different. I think it's the perpetual state of farmers to complain about the weather, but they in Niagara's case, it's all different.
How much more do you complain about weather in 2024 than what you did in 2014?
Well, we certainly look at the forecast every day and for the next 7 days, and we phone other farmers and talk about the weather and what's happening today in the next 7 days. So,
but how much support did you guys have coming in? Because you always hear stories in certain parts of the world, like in France, everyone views everyone side-eyed. Everyone's, everyone's in competition. From my experiences, it seems to be more of a sense of camaraderie, of everyone's on the same team. How was it for you guys? Is this when you're the new kids on the block, sometimes that can be hard, just getting acceptance from everyone around you.
Well, I don't know about Maria's thoughts, but we're still the new kids on the block.
Yeah.
I think you have to be like third generation in Niagara-on-the-Lake to be considered a native.
But everybody does think they're in this together. Mm-hmm. And it just brings everybody down here for all the great wine that's being produced now.
The thing we've been impressed with is we've met other people in similar circumstance to us. What comes to mind is On Seven, Vittorio and Sula, and Adnan and Elif over at
High Cellars.
Fake over at Lely.
Yep.
They're all intent on producing just the very best quality they possibly can.
Came from Toronto originally.
Yeah, and wanting to put Niagara on the map.
It's interesting. Ice Cellars was, and Lely. My memory of my thing with those guys, they're some of the best Cabernet that I've had. I remember trying Lely before. The Lely wines before, like in 14, 15, before the ownership changes and all of that. But thankfully now Lely's back on track and they make killer wines. Their Cabernet was one of the first 100% Ontario Cabernet that I loved, because I was expecting bell pepper and stocky, and no. And that's when I learned about the microclimates of this area, and it gets warmer. And the Ice Cellars as well. The first time I ever spent more than $100 on a Cabernet from Ontario, I certainly have with other grapes, was from them, because it was so good. And it kind of speaks to just that this region here can make serious Bordeaux blends. And I think that's part of why I wanted to have you guys on do the podcast, is to tell people, you know, that Ontario is not, I mean, it's killer Pinot and Gamay, but like these Merlots so far have been fantastic, and kind of speaks to the diversity of what we can do here.
And I must say that, having the generosity of Peter Gamble and Ann Sperling as well, as Adam and Matt, ensuring their experience, assisting in all of these wines don't just happen after you harvest.
Yeah.
A lot of times there's operations that are required to make the wine turn out the way you're hoping for, without manipulating a lot, but just knowing how to handle, for example, a little bit of botrytis, for example, and that happens in cooler years. It's really a tribute to them to help us produce the best possible wine we can.
The estate Merlot, that's your more entry level, correct?
Yes.
What I want to say about it is, I always say the testament to a great winery is when the entry level is damn good. I remember like the Gugel Cote de Rhone, which is like $20 a bottle. It's good. It's like it punches above its weight.
And
yeah, it's a solid wine. We'll get to the reserve and the signature Merlot, because ye Lord. But just again, and also it's kudos to you guys and the winemakers. You're still, cheers. It's still very early on, and your 18 estate Merlot, this is an example of what you want from it. I always say, and I think I said it earlier, Merlot to me is a warm hug of a wine. It can be an incredibly complex one. It can be a simple one, but I always just, it just fills the mouth, and it kind of makes you happy. And that's what I'm getting from the 18 estate Merlot. And also I've smelled and taken a little sip of all of them. None of these wines, there's no sense at all of underripe. There's no sense of there's not enough heat. And I think that's important, because from people listening from other parts of the world. They think Canada is some cold winter hinterland that can't make red wine.
We live in igloos.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
What we've found with our stand of Merlot here, Matt, is that phenolically we get there every year. So flavors have a beautiful herbaceousness, a lot of plums and cherries, as you would traditionally think of in Merlot. And so the challenge is to make sure that we pick at the right time and allow them to hang sufficiently, or like to get the most out of Mother Nature from the brick standpoint, from the sugar production standpoint.
What do people need to know about the difference between reserve and signature? You said these are wines that only come in where the vintage demands it. Is that correct?
Well, that's exactly right. If you speak to many of the wineries in Niagara, 20 is being called the vintage of the century.
Yeah.
It was optimal conditions for ripening the Bordeaux varieties, certainly, and the red varieties, as opposed to the whites. So in our case, we were very blessed, and we took the entire harvest for the first time of Merlot in 20 for ourselves. And really, the difference between the reserve and the signature comes down to barrels and barrel selection, blending, and this is where
they're unfiltered, and
also unfiltered owing to the nuances in the wine itself, but giving a great deal of credit to Peter Gamble and to Matt Smith and Adam.
Who introduced you to some of these people? These are all their own little mini wine celebrities, but how did you come across? Let's start with Peter Gamble.
Well, Peter was introduced to us by Adam Lowy.
Yep.
And Adam
works. And also been on the podcast. Yeah. It's funny, all these people we're talking to, all of them of alumni on the pod.
It's a super small world, Matt.
It really is.
It's almost a family.
When we bought the home, actually our real estate agent said, I just want to let you know, Niagara Lake's a small town. Well, the community itself, whether you're in the vineyard business alone, or the grape growing business alone, or the winemaking business, is even smaller.
Yeah.
And everybody's looking out for everybody, really, in the long run.
Yeah. And so people are helping one another. We certainly like to support other artisan wineries, and we feel very blessed to be allowed to be included in this family of really talented people.
Mm-hmm. And I think the important thing for all of it is again to communicate to the rest of the world like that. All the work that you guys do and other people do just to raise the quality standard. I think you agree. I mean, Scott, if you've been collecting wine since you were a teenager, the difference in terms of the consistent high quality of Ontario, of Niagara, and Prince Edward County now versus the early 2000s, like it consistently shocks me. I mean, I'm sitting here just drinking, going through your Merlots, and just going through all the different notes in my head, but it's so different now than what it was 20, 25 years ago.
Yes, indeed. I can recall Ray and I on one of our first sort of ventures down here to Niagara, going to Peller, not really being impressed with, at the time, with so much with the red wines. And we had dinner at the dining room there, and we ended up having a wine tasting at the table. Where the Somm said, well, I said, why don't you bring me something that's really good? They brought the signature version of the Peller wines, the Cab Sauve and the Cab Franc, which we purchased both on the spot at dinner, mm-hmm. and had one for dinner with our meal. Surprising me at the time, I didn't think Niagara could produce good red wine. And so it has changed a lot. And since doing that, tasting iCellar's wine, tasting the great Pinots that's produced by Cloudsley, that's produced by Thomas Backelder, that's produced by a number of the wineries down here, it's proven that you can do that. You can make great red wine.
How would you describe these two that we have here? The 2020, the two different Merlots in front of us, the Reserve and the Signature. How would you describe them?
Delicious.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So there was the 20s in our vineyard were picked in two installments, one at 23.7 bricks and another over 25 bricks. There was two picks. They were aged for 20 months in 20% new French oak and the balance neutral French oak. They have really just exhibited every fantastic element of Merlot that you could ever imagine. We've had numerous people say, we would never have guessed this was Niagara Merlot in a complimentary way.
By the way, it's funny. Sorry to interrupt. We're still in this phase, and I get it, because France has been around for 1,000 years and Napa has a head start. But often it's like, this doesn't taste Ontario. This feels like a warm climate, ripe Bordeaux or something.
Well, so, ripe Van Pomerol. That's what Tony said that day.
Yeah, Pomerol. Oh, absolute Pomerol.
So Tony Aspler was here for a tasting in September of last year, and that was his first impression was, this is like a right bank Pomerol, and that was as he was tasting the 20s. And
but you couldn't say this is just tastes like a fantastic Niagara Merlot.
Yeah,
but I feel like, you know, I think we're years away from that, unfortunately, but it's also just the nature of the business where the standard by what we, you know, was around forever, you know, it was France, and they had kind of a century or so head start.
Of course, of course.
And we do have French vines.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, this is good wine. It's not. It's actually great wine. It's not good Niagara wine. It's just great wine.
Yeah,
and that's what can be produced.
That's what we're trying to get to, promoting many of the wines from this area. I would say that Thomas Backhelder is probably the best ambassador for, as I'm sure you're aware,
yep,
for the Niagara Peninsula. And the wines that he's producing in the Pinot varieties, Adam's Pinot varieties and Chardonnay varieties, they're being shown in Europe at UK wine tastings and elsewhere on the continent. And they're being noticed by not just Ontario people, but by the world, in fact.
And I think that's, as we talked about earlier, about the insecurity of people that buying wine, and I don't even say that in a negative way. Wine can be very intimidating. People don't have the time to study it because they have real jobs, unlike me. But I think it is an important thing when you start getting the credit from Decanter, from all these other European winemakers that try your wine and go, you know, this is really good, and you're probably not charging enough for it. Like I think it almost like it normalizes it, or what it does is it allows Canadians to go, yes, it's okay to spend $60 on a bottle of Ontario wine, because if the French people love it, then why shouldn't I love it as well?
We just need them to try it. I don't think there's anybody that's tried it that hasn't bought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the proof is in the pudding. It's a bottle, right? And you just need to taste it. You need to experiment, try different ones, and see what speaks to you.
So anecdotally, one of my favorite wines that I've collected for many decades now is Purple Angel from Chile, produced by Montes, and I have a vertical in Purple Angel that you can see in our wine cellar. So we hosted a tasting with Rick and at Christmas time, just side by side, 2020 Purple Angel and 2020 Kirby Estate Signature Merlot. Now, some people might say, well, you're comparing Carmenere to Merlot, but for many, many years in South America, Carmenere was mistaken as Merlot. And so profile-wise, they're very similar from a mouthfeel, from a taste profile, etc. And so it was very interesting. They're both, you know, terrific wines, but we were very, very satisfied that our Merlot really is as good as, I would argue, better than Purple Angel. Now, Purple Angel may not be everyone's cup of tea, but you know, we've priced our wine in a similar vein to something like that. We think represents as good or better value.
And in terms of just the winemaking, the yield, the vine density, handpicked, the oak, the tree, like your way of making the wine is really no different than what it would be with Purple Angel or what it would be with high-end right bank Bordeaux as well, in terms of the process of making this wine, correct?
Yes, the tools are there and we use them.
There's no corners that are cut. There's no corners cut in the vineyard. There's no corners cut in the winemaking. So it takes all the processes to That's one thing you learn about wine, which I didn't appreciate necessarily before this endeavor, was it's winemaking and great wine is an accumulation of increments. Whether you're de-leafing, whether you're how you prune, how you till the soil, when you harvest, all of the different operations, and then how you sort the berries and whether you hand pick them and how they're not crushed when they're delivered to the sorting table and how they're aged in the different vessels, etc. So it all leads to something at the end.
You guys have learned so much over the last decade, haven't you? I mean, like, if you just think about your own knowledge base on what you knew before and previous jobs and life experiences versus since 2017, I mean, the amount you must know about just farming and pruning and weather and nature and oak and this or that, that's got to be crazy.
It's cool. It is cool.
But I mean, the wonderful thing about that is that how nice is it that you're always learning?
Oh, it's great. It's exciting. It's actually overwhelming at times because, you know, you'll speak to the experts and think, oh, I know so little. But there's always something new.
Yeah.
And, you know, every time I walk through the vineyard, I see something new or so I spot something. Or I wonder how I didn't notice it before.
And there's all those new issues, like whether it be a virus or whether it be a pest or whether it be weather or...
Or turtles. Were you saying stories about turtles?
I never thought I'd have turtles on my property.
Turtles laying eggs in your soil?
At the base of the vines, where it's sandy loam, and the birds, like, we remove the nests before they've laid their eggs, obviously, but well, the birds are always trying to hide nests in the vines.
And that's how you learn the difference between, like, more clay soil and sandy loam. Sandy loam turtles can lay their eggs, is what you were telling me before. What's next for you guys? Like, what, where do you see, because again, as you said, 7 years is still, you're in the infancy, even in a quote-unquote younger region like Niagara. But 7 years is still very
young. We've planted new varieties. We've planted new varieties last year. We've planted Petit Verdot. We've planted some Cab Franc, Cab Sauve. So we'll be harvesting some grapes off those vines in 2 years' time. And they'll be put in bottles, and they'll be on our next journey. And then we'll be tasting them.
That's exciting.
Not only that, we've tried to figure out what exactly we want to be when we grow up. You know, there's a number of business models for smaller farms like ours in the Niagara region. And we were very fortunate to purchase an existing mature vineyard. So for someone starting from square one, they would literally be waiting, you know, for probably 2 to 3 years for approvals. And then they'd be waiting for another 2 to 3 years after they planted vines, or maybe some of that might have run concurrent. And then they'd be waiting another 2 to 3 years before they'd have any product. So to start a winery from scratch in this environment is extraordinarily onerous in terms of financial commitment, in terms of time before you have your first drop of wine. So we've been able to successfully inherit a property that obviously had vines, and then find a business model that allows us to make some wine. And at the same time, we're also selling our grapes to other like-minded winemakers. And one that comes to mind is one of the most prominent in Niagara, which is Thomas Backhelder, for example, and with a different varietal. And so we're trying to find the right mix of scope for winemaking along with grape growing. You know, we admire the business model that Five Rose has adopted, where the Lowry Vineyard, they sell certain fruits and make their own wines at a high level. And that seems to be something that we're trying to emulate.
We're also looking very forward to the Pinot Blanc. We harvested Pinot Blanc in 22 for sparkling, and also for still last year, the 23. So we're looking forward to that. It won't be just Chardonnay and Merlot. It's going to be Pinot Blanc as well.
And which, by the way, also shows, you said, I interrupted you, but your just experimental nature, because Pinot Blanc is not a very common white varietal. You got to find the audience for it. It's easier to sell Chardonnay. It's even easier to sell yours. Yours is killer. But Pinot Blanc, you know, not as many people know about it. So kind of speaks to you guys wanting to take chances and experiment.
There, not as many people know about it. There's not as much of it in Niagara. And so we're special there too. And those wines are, you know, yet to unfold.
So I'd like to ask you, what do you think of the 20 Merlots?
Okay, so here's how I'm going to describe them. Like, I could go through all the notes. Sometimes if someone says, oh, this wine makes me happy, that can be code for it is simple. So I'm going to say this is high-end happy. Like, I smell it, and I taste it, and I immediately smile. And it's very warm, and it's very inviting. But then when you stop and you think about it, you are getting so many different fruit notes. I think led a little bit more by red, but still there's a lot of dark fruit. And it's warm, and it's a nice full palate. I get more spice on the final one. Is it the signature?
The signature.
Yeah, I'm getting a little bit more spice notes on the signature. The finish is a little bit longer there. But on all of these wines, the 20s and the 18s, these are impressive Merlots. And I'm not just saying it because if I was sitting here, if I didn't like them, there's little ways, there's codes you can do to say that you like the wine, but you don't really like it. But like, these are just wines that it just puts a big smile on your face.
Thank you.
Sometimes big, because what's the alcohol on this?
15.7.
Good for you. Good for you. if on a blind tasting, I'm going 14. There's no way I'm going beyond 14. Everything is well integrated. And for a 15.79 whatever Merlot, the worry is sometimes it gets too heavy. Indeed. And you don't want to have a second glass. This makes you want to have a second glass. Like, it's that nice mix where it's just all those beautiful jammy notes in a right way, but the freshness as well.
And maybe a little bit of earthiness to it as well in a good way.
These are great wines. I know sometimes, like, I talk about cost a lot or price of wine, and I think I do it because I'm just trying to normalize that spending $100 on wine, that's a lot. And when you do it, it should be for wines for birthdays, Christmas, anniversaries. This would absolutely fit in it. Like, you know, this is such a well-made Merlot. And I hope you guys stick with this. I like the idea of, it's like when someone wants Pinot Noir, it's like, oh, okay, well, there's Caylus or there's Kelly Mason or there's Batchelder. If it's Cabernet, well, then maybe try Ice Cellars or whoever. And then if it's Merlot, well, shit, you got to get Kirby. You got to go grab Kirby Merlot. Like, I think that's maybe one place you guys want to be. When it's Merlot, people are going to think Kirby.
Thank you. And, you know, it's interesting you said it's a special occasion wine. The special occasion is the bottle. Mm-hmm. So you open the bottle because that's a special occasion.
Hell yeah.
Don't have to wait for a birthday or an anniversary.
By the way, I say that all the time. I do wine events and I see people with giant cellars. And I'm like, when are you going to drink it? And like, oh, no, this is too nice. And I'm like, no. Okay, you've got five.
There's no day like today.
Yes, you have 500 bottles. Do you want to make Wednesday special? Open up that 14-year-old bottle of Pinot. Same thing with this. I mean, this is a hell of a way to make a Wednesday a much better Wednesday.
Huge. Cheers to that.
It's Wednesdays.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, guys.
Yeah, cheers to that.
Thank you so much for inviting me to your property, letting me, you know, sample your wines. Shout out to Rick Van Sickle as well, who said you got to go check him out. I had seen you guys in the last 6 months or so, first time I started to kind of notice who you were. And these are great wines. These are wines that people listening should go. People that love Bordeaux, people that love Bordeaux varietals, I would recommend. Where do people, if they want to find you, websites or addresses or whatever? You only make a tiny amount of wine. So like people, it's going to be hard for people to get a ton of your stuff. But if people want to find you, where do they go?
Run to your laptop or your phone. Yeah. Get on our website, kirbyestate.com, and we have an online store. And it's all there in front of you.
And we will deliver to your front door. We know that we'll be in some restos in short order as we've just started that journey.
Mm-hmm.
And happy drinking to everybody.
Yeah.
Stay thirsty, my friend.
Hell yeah. KirbyEstate.com. Maria and Scott, thank you guys so much for being part of the podcast. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on iTunes, Apple, Spotify, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.